Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, Robert Zemeckis joins us to chat about Here, and we play a Tom Hanks bracket challenge. Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 329 of Real Blend, a podcast that Tom Hanks calls A Poor Man's Smartless. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend and one of the co-hosts of the Real Blend podcast. And on this week's show, director Robert Zemeckis is going to join the show to talk about his new film Here with the great Tom Hanks, who was a guest on last week's show. You guys need to go back and listen to that one if you need to, and keep it here to listen to Zemeckis as well, too. In addition, we've been playing these movie bracket games, these movie face-offs. We did it for the horror movie season, and we're going to keep it going because we're enjoying playing it. We have a Tom Hanks bracket challenge. It's going to be coming up later on in the show. Let me introduce the boys really fast so we can get to this week's show, because we've got a lot to talk about. I'm going to start with Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., followed by Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Boys, how are things going today?
Hey, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Hi. I've got a message to deliver. Ooh. Someone is upset that you have not spoken to her much on the
show
lately.
Sweet girl. Hello, Daenerys.
Hi, Daenerys.
Look at that sweet face.
What a sweetheart.
Hi, little girl.
I miss her. See, now this is why you should be watching it on YouTube. Because you get to see
my sweet dog.
Jake's adorable girl. Yes. And Gabe Kovach sitting in the producer's chair. Gabe.
Equally cute. And some say Daenerys' favorite uncle, because I saw her just, 2 weeks ago?
Jake? Yeah, very true.
It's true. It's true. And you are planning a trip up there for the Deacons exhibit at some point as well, too. Gabe gets to do all the fun stuff. He gets on his motorcycle.
That's true.
Rides through the hinterlands. ends up in Chicago. God damn, I want to be Gabe when I grow up. It's going to be amazing.
Dude, just picture like all of a sudden you hear brrr, and you look over and it's Gabe on his motorcycle driving through the orange crisp leaves of Chicago, and you see me just riding behind him, my arms wrapped around his waist.
Terrified.
Your real hair flowing in the back. The hair you don't let us see. What's going on, boys? You got a junket coming up this weekend. We have one of the last big ones of the season.
We have as our attitude is, if it happens, but here's what I can tell you is going to happen is Kevin and I are going to be sharing a drink in Los Angeles tomorrow. And I think we can say seeing Wicked by the time you hear this, we will have seen it. And when I say sharing drink, I mean one of those big giant bowls with just two bendy straws.
Yeah, and I'm very excited. I haven't seen Jake in a bit, so we're excited to hang out in person. And you know, it's that's the thing about as you get older. Now I'm like, I get to travel and see my friends. So you know, I mean, we're excited to see the movie as well, and I'm excited to see what John Chu has done with this. I've heard really great things, and Jake and I will see it tomorrow night and have our interviews the next day. So we're excited about that. So by the time you hear this, we will have already seen it. Yeah, it'll be
done. And the Heights was great, so I'm excited to see what he does with it.
And yeah, both of you guys have seen the stage version, is that right?
I see it a couple of times, actually.
Incredible. I saw it in London. It's remarkable. Defying gravity.
So my hot take is, I think the first half of Wicked is really good. I don't think the second half is as good, so which is why I'm a little concerned, not about this movie, but about the one that comes out next year.
See, it's been years since I saw it, but the only thing that I really remember is loving how, spoilers for Wicked, if anyone hasn't heard this yet, I loved how the second half interlocked with the Wizard of Oz.
I thought that was
really cool. Is it just that you don't think the second half has as good songs? I know it's front-loaded with the better songs.
Yeah, the songs are not as strong in the second half. And
Defying Gravity is the best song in the whole show.
That's it.
That's like first half of the...
It's been a while since I've seen it. I've seen it twice. But I just by nature of being two movies, even the trailer, I feel like we're seeing a lot that is fresh and kind of added, right, Jay? Or either of you, if you remember the
runtime of this movie the show.
Like the whole show, right?
That's why I think maybe the second one, because I don't disagree with you, but I wonder if the second one has a chance to enhance from the sort of the stage.
Sure.
Did they shoot it back to back? Is it one? Did they shot it as one film?
I feel like they've been shooting it for a long time. I feel like we've been seeing Ariana and Cynthia appearing at events together for a long time.
Is this a Kill Bill situation where it was shot as one film?
I think it was always. I seem to remember it always being two.
Yeah, it was.
They're just not advertising it as such, though. Someone,
Dune.
why they are were allowed to take pictures of the screens. My understanding is someone took a picture of the title card of this movie, and in the title card for this film, it is referred to as Wicked Part One.
And that's what happened with Dune. I mean, when Dune came out, it was called Dune, and we all sat down, and it was like Dune Part One. That was the first time we'd seen it labeled that way. That's fair. You know.
I'll be genuinely curious to see what you guys think of it. And then it's a year until the second one comes out, right?
That's a good amount of time. That seems right.
Yeah, I guess so.
What was the time frame between the Lord of the Rings films? That was every year. It was every Christmas,
one per year. Yeah. It was like December. It was December every year for I mean, I guess what, 2 years? Because it'd be one and then two.
Because that was shot as one film, right? Mm-hmm. And then they
It was always going to be three films.
But it wasn't shot all back.
It was shot all at one time, but it was three movies shot back to back to back.
Right.
Have either of you started? You mentioned Dune, the Dune show yet? Prophecy. You started?
I have. I watched the first episode.
Are we allowed to talk about it yet?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. Exists.
I'll text you. It exists. I can tell you that.
You watched it for the first. Yes. Watch one episode. All right, we'll get to that in a little bit. Hello, thank you very much for joining us. Hope you guys are watching us on the YouTube channel for the visual element of the show. If you'd like to join us, we're at youtube.com/realblendpodcast. Give us a like and a subscribe. We have pushed over 40,000 subscribers, which is fantastic. Share the show with a movie loving friend. We always love adding more people to the show, and you know, getting interviews with people like Tom Hanks, Robert Zemeckis obviously helps the cause and also helps us lure back future guests as well, too. A couple of people that we've circled for the calendar between the end of this year and going into the Oscar season. You guys might have heard at some point over the course of time, we started the show as an awards podcast, and we like to get a lot of the directors and actors on, and we'll see how this year shapes up. We're going to have an argument, I think, later on this year about Anora. I want to wait till Kevin gets a chance to see it, but
we've see got it some tomorrow.
Excited to see opinions. It. Yeah. Oh, good, Kev.
Yeah, I'm going to see it on 35mm tomorrow, which I'm excited about.
I'm seeing Brutalist on Sunday.
Oh, I can't wait for Brutalist.
Yeah.
In 70?
Is that just a screening? Or is it opening?
Screening. No, it's not going to be in 70 based on where I'm seeing it.
Okay.
Are there interviews for that? I would love to.
Yes. Yeah. I'll send you the info. Oh,
what's the studio? Please.
A24. We all, the three of us, have to say it together. Back at Ridley.
A23?
Yeah.
We have to correct Ridley Scott.
Yeah. And of course, if you sign up for Real Blend Premium, to wrap up the housekeeping bit of it, you get an ad-free version of the show and a newsletter from me every other Friday. Check the description for information on where to sign up. All right. So we're still circling here. This is the movie that came out last week. It stars Tom Hanks and Robin Wright. It is a reunion of the Forrest Gump team. So that means that they are back together with their director, Robert Zemeckis, who is a first time guest on the Real Blend podcast, obviously a legendary director who has a number of amazing titles to his career. And we are very happy to have him on the show. This is Robert Zemeckis joining the Real Blend podcast on behalf of his new film here.
This episode of Real Blend is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. Perhaps you have an upcoming international trip, or maybe you want to better connect with a particular friend or family member, or many of you listening to a movie podcast may just want to discover new ways of appreciating foreign language films, music, or literature. That's where Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program, can help you take those goals to the next level. I myself like to pick up on as much of the local language as I can while I'm traveling, and Rosetta Stone has been a great way to get a head start. Rosetta Stone has been trusted for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. It's designed for long-term retention with no English translations, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language, and it's available on desktop and mobile, so you can continue to learn whenever and wherever is best for you. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Real Blend listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off when you visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
I have to believe this concept of exploring the history of one location has been inspiring you for decades. I mean, I can't not watch Here and think of Marty returning to the town square in Hill Valley, you know, from 1885 all the way up to the distant, distant future of 2015 and you exploring how it changed over time. Is this an idea? Is this a belief and a concept that has fascinated you for many years now?
No, I haven't thought about it at all until I read the Richard McGuire graphic novel, which is what it's based on. And so that when I read that novel, I looked at it and I thought, wow, this could be a really, really interesting movie.
You know, Mr. Zemeckis, Don Burgess, I think, is one of the greatest DPs of all time. And the way the logistics of the frame here are fascinating to me. And I'm just curious in terms of even sound design, how the logistics worked in the world where the actors were moving around, how aware they were of the camera being set. And how you kind of figured out what you were going to show us with the mirror or taking us outside at certain times. I just think it was really cool how you played with that. And also the little edits on screen with the squares and rectangles.
Right. Yeah. Well, like the panels that you mentioned, those were inspired by the graphic novel. But yeah, I mean, the work that we had to do to design the shot, if you will, the view that the audience is going to see, took a lot of preparation, and everything that we knew that the entire movie had to work within this one view that the audience has. So making sure that everything worked in that setup was crucial. And we did most of that work in pre-production, and we had to, obviously, otherwise it wouldn't have worked when we were on the set.
Mr. Zemeckis, as a quick follow-up, there's a shot in your career that I've always wanted to ask you about, and please allow me to geek out for 1 second, because when you showed the mirror in this particular film and it kind of gave us a view behind, it did bring me back to the Jenna Malone running shot in Contact, which I have seen breakdowns of how that shot was done. I have watched that shot 1,000 times. I still don't understand how you pulled that off. And I know as a filmmaker, you're a magician. You're creating an illusion for us to believe as audience members. But can you walk through your memory of setting that up, how you shot it, and how does that shot work?
Well, the shot, shooting that shot was very simple because all we did was shoot, two setups. One was we had Jenna run in front of a Steadicam, and then we shot just an empty plate of the medicine cabinet with a blue screen where the mirror was going to be, and we just shot a plate of that, and then we put it together in the computer.
But she's running up the steps. Is there a cut?
No.
That's
no.
What?
So you know, there's no cut. But what happens is that the shot that she's running in morphs into the blue screen of the so the Steadicam continues from her running up the stairs to that image coming out of the medicine cabinet. Very simple. Actually, very, very wow. Simple. You have to imagine as if the camera were a mirror running in front of Jenna.
Okay.
And then it turns out that the mirror is actually on the medicine cabinet. That's the simplest way to kind of wrap your head around it.
Gotcha.
I still don't understand.
You and I spoke in Chicago a couple of days ago, and you told me a really great story about being in the middle of production on Forrest Gump. You guys were in the middle of shooting the Vietnam sequences when all of a sudden it was suggested to you, hey, we've got great weather. Can we shoot Forrest at Jenny's grave? And you guys pivoting and shooting that after lunch. And I want to sort of take that and expand on it. How much of being a director is being prepared to pivot like that and go with a completely different scene that you weren't prepared for at any given moment? And did you have to do that at all on the set of Here?
Actually it's very uncomfortable when you have to do that. I don't like it. I don't like doing that because I feel like I'm being thrown a curve and I'm not prepared. Usually it happens when things, in the case of the pivot we did in Forrest Gump, if Tom had any reservation and said, no, I really need another day to think about this, we wouldn't have done it. But the fact that he was willing to go for it, we went for it. But usually when you have to do the pivot, it's when an actor is sick or something breaks down or something didn't show up that's important to do the scene. And it's, or all of a sudden there's a tornado warning and everybody has to, things like that. And they're very, very disconcerting and I don't like it. I don't like having curves thrown at me, to be perfectly honest.
Mr. Zemeckis, I love the inclusion of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, playing All My Lovin'.
Great, good.
Seminal moment. It takes place at a part in Richard's life where he's distracted and not even really paying attention to it. I'm wondering if you remember where you were when they first played on the Ed Sullivan Show.
I absolutely do. I can never forget it. I mean, that's one of those things that's why it's in the movie, because I think that the first time that audiences saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show is seared into the memory of a certain generation or certain age, because it was one of those moments. I was watching in my living room in my house in Chicago. I remember it exactly.
That's cool. I love that you're able to go back to that memory.
Incredible. You know, we were talking with Tom Hanks earlier, and I always, anytime I think of Deep Focus, I always think of what Orson Welles did in Citizen Kane. I mean, he was 26 years old when he made that film, which is insane to me. But the lens that you're using here in this film, no pun intended, everything's in deep focus. every aspect of the frame is in deep focus. Can you speak about your relationship with Don Burgess, developing that idea, having everything in deep focus, the lens that was used? Because as a filmmaker, your lens choices and your aspect ratio choices, those are all narratively driven. They have to be. And I just wonder what that relationship is like with Don and the lens choice here.
Don and I never spoke about a lens for as many weeks as we ever have about the lens for here. we talked about it for, I think, 3-4 weeks. It was choosing between the 40 and the 35, the 40 and the 35. And we actually built a mock set on a stage at Pinewood and tested both lenses and put them through their paces to finally make the decision. And we ended up going with the 35 because I was wondering if the 40 would just suck the actors a little bit closer to the audience. But then what happens, of course, is that it flattens out the lighting. And then the 35, they weren't as close in a lot of the scenes, but the image was a lot more elegant. So went with the 35.
Wow, that's
so cool. Is the sound design affected at all, like when they're further away and closer, like... did that at all play into like how you wanted the sound design to play?
No, that's just that. Well, the wonderful thing about having a fixed image, a fixed camera, is we could put the microphones in the shot because they're cheap. We could paint them out cheaply. So we were, and then of course you get perfect sound. So it was very helpful to be able to have the microphones, just like this one is above me right here, just out of frame. But if we widen out the shot, you'll see the microphone. But then if we don't have the budget
to paint it out.
So we won't show it to you. But yeah, that was very helpful. Yep.
That's cool.
In this movie, we see a life in its entirety from beginning to nearly the end. We don't always get that with characters in many movies. Oftentimes we see sort of a sliver of what is their entire life. Do you have characters in any of your films where you're left wondering, like, I wonder how things worked out for them? Has there ever been a moment where you've paused and just out of curiosity, even if we never see it, I wonder how things worked out.
No, I have to be honest with you. When I finish a movie, I pretty much don't think about it anymore. You know, I really, I actually, I've been there, done that. I'm done. Go have a good life. You know, we'll move on.
So you never made a decision. That the example I'll bring up is Tom literally at a crossroads at the end of Castaway, and we never know what direction he's going to go in. It's a great metaphor.
Who knows what's going to happen? Yeah, no, I have no idea. I have no idea.
What lies beneath that surface, Mr. Zemeckis? Come on.
Well, I was going to bring up this story regardless because of the themes of the film. And then I learned after the fact that you actually shot at Pinewood. But I was lucky enough to be in Pinewood and be on a soundstage. And our tour guide said to us, do you recognize where you are? At this point, it had been decorated for a Marvel film. And I said, well, no, I have no idea where I am. And they said, well, this is where Luke Skywalker and Han Solo got their medals at the end of A New Hope. And I felt the history, you know, like I could actually, being on that spot, feel the impact of understanding that location. No, being at Pinewood or even all the different places where you filmed, is there a place where you shot where something else that was important to you was shot that you actually like physically felt a connection to?
Yeah, well, I don't want to rain on your parade, but I think you ought to go back and research whether you're right about that or not, or if they were not 100%.
Oh, no.
Because I happen to know that the first Star Wars was shot at the Elstree Studios. And I know that because that's where I shot Roger Rabbit, which it doesn't exist anymore. And now it's a shopping mall.
She lied to me.
I'm afraid she might have. Do your research. But I know
I know that
Star Wars was shot at Elstree.
Okay.
They might have had to go to Pinewood for one big scale or bigger stage or something. But so she might be right. But most of the movie was shot at, if it was shot there, the rest was shot at Pine, at Elstree.
I have a mission now.
Yeah,
I'm check this
it
lady.
Out. Yeah, check it out.
You know, the history of the films that you've made specifically, but Alan Silvestri, you know, he's almost like one of your biggest characters in every one of your movies that we just don't see. And like Tom Hanks was talking a little bit earlier about like the music in Castaway, the limited music in Castaway, and then also the choice of when to use it, when not to use it. But Alan's work here is remarkable. I loved what he did on Ready Player One with the Zemeckis Cube and everything like that. It was so cool. But I'm just curious, like, you know, you have these frequent collaborators like Don Burgess. And when someone like Alan Silvestri, do you remember the first piece of music he ever wrote for you?
Oh, yeah. He didn't write it for me. But I do remember when I was doing Romancing the Stone, he just walked into my office at 20th Century Fox and said, hey, I heard, my agent heard through the grapevine that you're looking for a composer and I just want to drop off this cassette. And I listened to it and I thought, yeah, this has the right feel. And then I sent it to Michael Douglas, who was the producer of the movie. And he said, yeah, it sounds like it could work. And we brought Alan in and the rest is history. Yeah. Wow.
I am curious, though, as you've seen your film set to music over the years, do you have a particular emotional experience you remember having about a scene you directed? I'm sure they all mean something. They're all important to you. But do you remember sitting there and watching a scene of yours on screen and hearing Alan's music or any composer's music set to it and just what you remember going through and kind of how it brought it to life?
Yeah, I think of all the movies that I made, I think that Al's score for Forrest Gump is probably the one that's the most emotional for me anyway. And really brings just the perfect feel to every image in that movie.
Wow. It's a perfect score. I want to talk about the idea of someone moving into your house and making it their own. And at that point, you have no control over what they do with it and what color they paint the walls and how they arrange the furniture. And I want to put that in the context of movies. So far, you've been pretty lucky, but one day someone will likely in theory, remake one of your movies, and it'll be like them moving into your house and them painting the walls and making it their own. And I'm just sort of curious how you feel about that.
Will I be dead?
I don't know how that works.
If I'm dead, I won't care.
Sure.
If I'm alive, you know, it'll have to be really good. I mean, if I'm alive and they're going to remake one of my movies, it's going to have to be really good.
Yeah, they better have a good pitch.
And they're going to have to really improve. They're going to have to really improve it. And actually, I'd be interested to see that.
There you go. Yeah. There you go, Mr. Zemeckis. We'll get you out of here on this one. There's a line in here that struck me. I had to believe that you either received this advice at some point, or maybe you've even gone on to give it. Get a job where you get a suit.
Get a job where you wear a suit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. My father always told me that line. He was a carpenter. He was a construction worker, and he always said, you know, I hope you get a job someday where you wear a suit. They always said that. He always said that. So that's kind of where that one came from. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Very nice. Well, thank you so much for your time, Mr. Beckus. We really appreciate having you on.
And by the way, I didn't pay attention to him.
No,
and we're so glad you didn't.
I don't have a job. I have a job where I wear jeans and a sweatshirt. So
thank you, Mr. Zemeckis.
Thank you.
All right.
We have to thank our good friends at Sony for hooking us up with the Robert Zemeckis interview. And thank Robert Zemeckis, of course, for coming on the show. We have been having this conversation about how we handle discussing this interview because, you know, we're candid with you guys. And we love to pat ourselves on the back when we have a really good interview. And as you could tell, that one didn't quite go as well as we would have hoped. And that happens sometimes. We go in with what we think are incredible questions. We feel really confident in our approach. And we don't get quite the type of open and sprawling storytelling questions or answers that we want to get from a subject. And I think if you guys watch that interview, you can see that we were trying, you know, we were bouncing ideas off of him. I knew, Jake, that it was going to go sour with my very first question, because I was really proud of that connection.
It was a great connection.
Yeah. I remember, because Sean and I saw it, I think, on the same day. Kevin, I think you saw it a day after us. We're talking about the movie here. And Sean had called me with that connection of like, hey, this is a thing that Zemeckis has touched on before when you think about showing the same locations over the course of time throughout the Back to the Future trilogy. And I said over the phone at that time, dude, you gotta lead with that, man. Either because that's either gonna get one of two reactions. Either it's gonna get him going, "Oh my god, I never thought about that. That's brilliant, really interesting." Or he's gonna go, "You're absolutely right. That's you're 100% right." You know. But here's what I'll say: is that in all the conversations I've seen about the movie here, both before we did that interview and since, I still have not seen anyone else make that connection or bring that up. Right. So I agree with you. The moment that he was not enamored with that connection and in fact kind of
dismissive,
kind of shut it down and it was not open to the possibility that maybe it was something he hadn't thought of. I was a little concerned about the direction the rest of the interview was going to go.
And I was sitting there as you were asking it going, and I had, you know, we had exchanged our questions over email, and I was like, oh, I can't wait. Like, what is his response going to be to this? I'm really interested in knowing, because it is a really interesting connection. And
sometimes, you know, like, I don't know if you guys remember last week when we recorded the show, I was just about to interview Mikey Madison, and I was so excited to ask her a question about how she has three massive scenes that take place in the living room.
Yeah.
And kind of the same thing. Like, I really thought either I was going to get like, oh my god, that's really interesting, I didn't think about that, or like really have her go through. I got kind of a very similar thing, like, oh no, like I didn't think about that. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And that was it.
There's nothing worse than that in an interview setting, right? Like when the
because you think you have something
just
unique, yeah,
yeah. I'd rather a combative pushback, you know, or something that can engage a conversation. But when it's just, oh no, I never really thought about that. Well, yeah. Can you think about it now?
Yeah, I got time.
And now that we've put it out there, aren't you interested in that connection? It's a fascinating connection. It was like, I remember with Mikey Madison for Scream 5, I don't remember if I asked her this on camera or not, but like the idea of her characters being killed by a flamethrower in both Hollywood and that, which was just a, you know, a crazy coincidence. But like, even something like that, you can run with it. Like, I don't remember what her response was to that, so I can't say that now. But I mean, those things, if the actor or the filmmaker hasn't thought about it, the least you can do is, you know, at least just try and run with it a bit and go, oh, well, that, yeah, you're right. That is an interesting thing. I think Robert Zemeckis is probably just, in my opinion, probably just tired of talking about Back to the Future. But at the same time,
I worried about that.
But it's not, but that shouldn't be, you're promoting a film. Your job is to promote your movie, and it is actually a relevant connection. Sure. It is.
Yeah, I thought so. Well, but regardless, not even that question, like other things that we swung at. And then Jake and I kind of talked after the fact of like, did a breakdown analysis of like, what did we do? Did we miss with that one? But the one that we landed on that just made me laugh so hard was him shooting me down with the Star Wars story. Because I can't change my memory. Like, I was on the set of Pinewood, and the woman who was taking us around set for, this was back for Thor the Dark World, and it was literally the Asgardian throne with the ship through it, and she was like, this is where they shot the end of Star Wars. When I brought that up, and Zemeckis was like, oh wait, let me tell you. No, it isn't.
You dumbass.
Fantastic. But by that point, I was just like, well, this is going to go the way it's going to go, and we're just going to ride it out. And what I love too collectively about the three of us is we all knew, we all recognized like, oh, wait a second, this one's not going to go so well. And we've had them. We've had a couple of those over the course of this show. And so, you know, we tried to keep the ball bouncing as well as we could on the court. And then we sort of moved it on. But I don't know. I'd like to get him back on. I would love to get him back on.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. I mean, he's standing invitation anytime. And obviously one of our greats. But I bring all that up to transition into a real quick topic of here's box office and what it might say for the lack of a grown up audience, quote unquote. Right. Like, this is a movie that's drama that's aimed at theater goers that clamor all the time for non-sequels, you know, non-IP, the strength of a movie star, because obviously there's none bigger than Tom Hanks, no matter what generation or decade we're talking about. They pushed hard the reunion of Forrest Gump. I did see Hanks and Robin Wright on, you know, multiple daytime talk shows. Hanks did a couple of the evening shows and did press, you know, coming around on a couple of different podcasts and did junket. Here only cleared 4.8 domestic. It has no international release yet. And that's not 4.8 in a limited release. That is 4.8 million domestic across 2,647 theaters. I want to get you guys' take. Kevin, what do you think? Blip or, you know, trend of trouble for some of these, you know, more mature movies that are coming down the pipe?
I'll be honest. I mean, like, I think we're in a time period now where there's really no predictability as to what's going to happen, because we have so many different options and there's different genres that people think aren't going to do well. Like, well, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, outside of like, was it Anyone But You, the romantic comedy genre hasn't really been a huge success recently. Here feels like a movie that you maybe like would have been successful in the 90s. Or early 2000s, I think, at the kind of that peak of Tom Hanks's, you know, career in that sense. Yeah. But I don't know. It's so hard to explain or try to understand why things do well and why things don't do well. When you look at Terrifier 3, which is a micro budget horror film, which is going to cross 65 million worldwide. You had Art the Clown closing the NASDAQ closing bell recently. So you can't really, it's insane to think about it, but you know, a movie starring Tom Hanks and Robin Wright, directed by the director of Forrest Gump, reuniting the two actors from one of the most important films in the cinema history. You know, I don't really know. And then you have like we have a whole discussion months and months and months ago about superhero fatigue. And then Deadpool Wolverine comes out and makes $1.3 billion at the box office. So what is the X factor? And it's an interesting conversation. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have Wicked and Gladiator 2, which I think is going to be a very healthy box office. Both of them seem to have incredible tracking. Franchise films.
Without a doubt. And sequels and an IP.
It's an interesting thing, but then you do have then you have these films that are doing well that you wouldn't think would do well. Long Legs made over $100 million for Neon. The Substance, I think, crossed somewhere around $50 million or $55 million. That's a film from the MUBI studio. I'm curious to see what Heretic does, which is an A24 film, The Brutalist and things like that. But I don't know. I don't really know anymore how to predict these things.
I think it's easy to, like, you know, at this point after the first weekend to go, oh, I think that 2 + 2 = 4 here. Like, I think it's right. Easy to kind of put anything together and say that's why. But my read on it is the trailer is a hard sell. Like, the film doesn't look, it looks unique and it looks different, but that doesn't necessarily always a good thing. I mean, we're talking about these franchise films being the sure bets type thing, but it looks kind of weird. It looks kind of weird and not in like a striking way, just very
it's
different.
Also hard to explain.
Hard to explain, which yes. Hank's talked about. It's hard to explain. And Zemeckis weird is not like mass appeal weird always. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you couple that with Rotten Tomato scores and everything, and I don't think the audience always, obviously, sometimes audience totally, you know, retaliates against a Rotten Tomato score. But I think when you have a trailer that is a hard sell, hard to explain, and just not, is kind of like, okay, I'm not sure how to feel about that for the average audience. And it gets a 33 out the gate. I think these days, there's so much to spend your time doing that it's really hard to get an audience motivated for this type of film to begin with no buzz around it. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I mean, it's hard to do.
Here's the other thing. The third Venom film is at $316 million worldwide.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I say that
a billion.
Right. I say that because, like, yeah, what is the marketplace look like right now? Like, I mean, I'm surprised Venom did that well, but it's a lot of it's international. Like, and we know that a lot of these films sometimes
it hasn't crossed 100 million domestically.
Right, like 220 international.
Venom is inherently fun. Like, it's also weird, but it's like a fun weird. Like, it's a weird that you watch and you're like, I got to see this silly horse scene. You know what I mean? Like,
here's the thing though. Here's what Zemeckis used to amount to, I think. Castaway opened to 28 million the year it came out. Adjust for inflation, it's got to be higher than that.
Sure.
Flight opened to 24 million. He was always kind of in that ballpark, right? Like, this is a steep drop for what used to be a Zemeckis drama. And I don't really know, Jake, do you think that he was ever a name that people went to go see the new Robert Zemeckis movie? Or, like, with Flight, it was because Denzel Washington was in it. With Castaway, it was more of a Tom Hanks sell.
Yeah, he always had pretty splashy vehicles. And Flight was a pretty striking, I don't know if you guys remember that campaign, was all about the plane crash.
Yeah.
You know, it was, and What Lies Beneath was a big summer movie at a time where Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer were still opening big movies. Castaway, just the general concept, Tom Hanks on an island, it sells itself. Yeah. I think the problem with here is that the audience for a movie like Here is not an audience that goes to the movies often, and it's not an audience that goes to the movies on opening weekend. Mm-hmm. So when you have a movie that is getting kind of ripped apart, I think a lot of the older audience members will go, well, we don't go to the movies very often, and it's supposedly not very good.
Right, right.
And, you know, by the time the people who are still interested, despite reviews, get around to seeing it, it probably won't be in very many theaters anymore.
Yeah.
I know that, but there are a lot of people who, you know, I think on the flip side, I think, like, Gladiator is going to play so well through, you know, it opens the Friday before Thanksgiving. I think it's going to play so well. I think a lot of sort of the older audiences, like my parents are coming to Chicago for Thanksgiving and literally told me yesterday, my parents don't really go to the movies. Oh, hey, maybe we can go see Gladiator while we're in town, you know? And,
yeah.
And it's, I just think that, what Here needed to be, for the audience who I think was willing to give it a chance, it wasn't.
Also, but look at something like A Man Called Otto, for example. I know it's based on a book, or is it a book, right?
It's a book,
I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
That movie made
much stronger reviews.
$113 million.
Yeah, so, but remember, that word of mouth, it didn't open big. Right. It had a very, very minimal word of mouth draw in January, too, with far less competition.
It did $12 million in 3,800 theaters.
Yeah.
Right, but also $113 million overall. So the question then becomes, like, Tom Hanks is still, you know, Elvis made a lot of money. Obviously, I don't know if that was a Tom Hanks factor. It was probably more Austin Butler and the Elvis name.
Elvis is a franchise again.
The name, yeah. But so is Tom Hanks still a box office Is he still bankable at the box office?
As much as anyone else in his
bankable.
Generation. You know, well, I think he gets as much as Julia Roberts, as much as Sandra Bullock, you know. I mean, why is Tom Cruise stuck in Mission Impossible land?
Yeah, I think it's we've had this conversation. I think it's that you're bankable, but you're not bankable only on the name alone. It has to be bankable with an exciting, like with a movie that looks good and people are telling you is good. Like, it's not, you can have a good movie that no one sees, you know, and then it gets home video, like those little cult classic films or those ones that sort of blow up when they hit streaming that are good movies that just didn't have enough buzz around them to get mass appeal. A Tom Hanks can take a really good movie and get the mass appeal because you go, oh, it's really good. And it's Tom Hanks giving a great performance.
You know,
you need them both.
What one of the big differences is, and I don't know, I don't fault Hanks for doing this, but Tom Hanks crossed over the line and started doing some streaming movies.
Jake's favorite movie of the decade.
Finch. What other than Finch? What else?
Greyhound.
Okay.
Apple movie. I thought there was one other as well too. Finch, Greyhound. I want to say there was one.
I thought he had another Apple one. Yeah.
Either way, he produced that. Masters of the Air.
But Cruise is still in Mission Impossible land, he has not allowed himself to make himself available too. And neither has, I don't think Denzel has either. You know, like they're the last two. Well, DiCaprio hasn't. They're like,
no, DiCaprio,
they seem to be.
Went streaming.
Did he?
For
Don't Look Up. That's
and
right.
And do you count Macbeth as streaming?
Oh, that's, Macbeth was a streaming film.
Shit.
Yeah. For
all
Denzel.
Right. Never mind. So is it just Cruise? Right? Is it just Cruise then? Who's the last holdout for, if you're going to watch me, you're going to watch me in a theater?
I mean, he's Mr. like movies in the theater. Like, you know, that's why he's in Mission Impossible, is because he's like, I want to make big movies that.
So the question would be, if Tom Cruise tried a Here level movie, would the audience follow him?
Well, we're about to find out. His next movie is with Iñárritu.
That's sold. Right.
So we've been talking about this for years. I'm so ready for
the return of 90s Tom Cruise.
Yes. Just pepper one in, you know, every couple years.
No.
Give us a Magnolia.
One for them, one for us.
One for us, one for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I guess we'll see what happens. But I don't know. The Here box office coupled with the dumping of Juror number 2 just has me concerned. Has me concerned for the future of some of these directors who have loved. And I don't know. It's getting harder and harder.
Didn't Juror number 2 have a really good per theater average?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I mean, 50 theaters said all it had to take was like 8 people per theater.
So Juror number 2. Well, this is interesting. It made 5 million international, 90,000 domestic.
So they pushed it harder in other. I thought it was going to like.
Wow.
For some reason, I thought they were opening it in like the Middle East. There was like some weird territory that they were going to open Juror number 2 in. I don't know why.
Huh.
I have no idea the really
things. So sometimes international markets have like, it's like, oh, this turns out Clint Eastwood's very popular.
Yeah.
You know, like it's sometimes there's just territories that work out though. For people who have worked for that
if
long.
If it was shot there, I would get it. I'd be like, oh yeah, I understand. People might want to go see, but it was shot in Savannah, oddly enough, where I just was. And from what I understand, it didn't really take use of the location, but I don't know. You guys will probably see that on a plane at some point soon when you're traveling someplace. Hey, look, Juror number 2 is on here. I'll throw it on. Okay, so we are going to try a Tom Hanks best movie bracket fight, and I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that Road to Perdition places fairly. Places fairly, so that Jake doesn't wait it.
Cloud Atlas. Yeah.
Hey,
this
no
is
spoilers.
A reason.
We'll get there.
This is a reason for you guys to tune over to the YouTube channel. So remember, it's youtube.com/RealBlendPodcast.
Here we go. I'm excited. Right.
Quick intro. These bracket fights we've got. I did not put these matchups together. This was one that was preloaded. I did go through it and I approved it. I liked it. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to make any changes. There's some really fun matchups that come together here. There maybe he's got such a long filmography that maybe there's some stuff overlooked here. But I think the hits are here and a good spread of what Tom Hanks does. And the way this works is it's kind of a this or that situation. They go head to head and we have to decide which one are we going to put ahead of the other. And we'll go in order until we have our de facto best, I guess we'll call it. Tom Hanks film. To start things off, We have Forrest Gump versus Joe versus the volcano.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. Easy.
It's Gump.
It's Gump. It's Gump.
Yeah. Oh, Sean voted Gump.
It's Gump. Yeah.
All right. Wow. Clip it. We're done here. Put that on social. Tag Sean. All right. Forrest Gump takes it. Up next, we have Sleepless.
Oh, wait. Let me pause for a second. Go ahead. You know what I did listen to is the score for Forrest Gump this past week. It's beautiful.
It really is. It's a great score.
It's an incredible score. But having Hanks talk about it in our interview, I was like, all right, let me give it a chance. And I just threw it on the background. I was working and I was like, yeah, this is really fun.
Yeah. So it works for you if you don't watch the movie, you just listen to it.
Yes. Yes. Script is dog shit, but the score is good.
Jesus. No, that movie's great.
We have Sleepless in Seattle versus You've Got Mail.
You've Got Mail.
Sleepless.
You've Got Mail for me.
I know Sleepless is the, like, I feel like the popular choice, but I prefer You've Got Mail.
I love You've Got Mail.
I like that he's a little bit more prickly in this one.
Yeah.
I like the timestamp of AOL 90s, you know, era internet. It feels like such a moment in time. I mean, again, it's one of those cliches that film critics love to use, but it really is one of those, like, oh, they don't make movies like that
anymore. I think of You've Got Mail as the bigger classic, but...
Really? So I always thought Sleepless in Seattle was the more well-respected one.
Interesting.
And You've Got Mail kind of rode the coattails.
Yeah.
And just lived on the fumes of Sleepless in Seattle. But I prefer You've Got Mail.
Same.
See, and I thought that they made You've Got Mail solely because of the critique that in Sleepless in Seattle, they don't meet till the very end.
Oh, interesting. But it's funny, in You've Got Mail, they hate each other the whole time.
It's so good. You've Got Mail is so good.
Yeah, it's so
the
great.
Ending.
Yeah.
Interesting. So all right, I would be Sleepless and it wouldn't be close.
But and one of my favorite gifts to use is Tom Hanks typing on the...
Yeah.
He's so fucking
maybe
good.
I need to give it another rewatch.
All right, You've Got Mail moves on.
Wow, interesting.
Then we have Captain Phillips versus Sully. Ooh.
Captain Phillips.
I think that you can make a really solid argument that that's... potentially his one of his all-time great performances.
Yeah,
which didn't get recognized.
How that didn't get an Oscar nomination, I'll never understand.
I do think Sully is underrated.
In this decision,
okay. I think Sully is remarkable, and I think it's an incredible film.
That's a strong matchup.
I do think Captain Phillips, because Paul Greengrass directed that film like remarkably, and the ending scene when he finally breaks down.
That's not my blood. Can I just say really quick, for those of you who are watching us on YouTube, tell me that Sully poster doesn't look like a fake movie. And you know, like in movies where they like have fake posters
and they
try to do like fake trailers, like coming this fall, Tom Hanks is Sully. Like that looks like that movie does not look real.
Yeah.
Well, sadly, a lot of Clint's movies kind of come across that way. I mean, he's got some classics.
It looks like someone took like a Catch Me If You Can photo of Tom Hanks and then like photoshopped his hair and stuff. Yeah. Like it does. You're correct.
I recommend rewatching Sully. It's so good.
I only saw it the one time in theaters.
Kev,
not loving it.
Is your official vote Sully or is it officially?
No, I'll go Captain Phillips. Okay. Just because I think Captain Phillips is one of the direction in that. I mean, I love Sully too, but Captain Phillips is incredible.
Captain Phillips moves on. Next, we have Castaway versus Charlie Wilson's War.
To me, Castaway is Tom's best performance.
Yeah.
Well, are we talking performance or movie?
I think it's one of his best movies. I think Castaway is a masterpiece.
I think I want to pick Charlie Wilson's War, but not for Tom Hanks. Like, that's the problem.
Well, Philip Seymour Hoffman's freakout scene is fantastic.
Like, I think that carries it for me, but... I mean, I'm not mad at Castaway moving on here. It's
Castaway.
Yeah, it's Castaway.
Yeah. Shout out, Charlie.
I'm going to protect a few of my cards, but I might have some controversial takes.
Ooh. Are you getting, and I quote, spicy?
I might have to get a little spicy.
Kevin, do the chair thing.
Have we gotten spicy during the bracket challenge?
Not yet, no, but we may.
All right, Castaway moves on. That brings us to Big versus The Burbs. For me, it's Big. The Burbs I've maybe seen once. I don't know that that's blasphemous, but Big was more of a movie.
Yeah,
for me
I gotta go Big on this one.
It's Big.
We're going Big going home. You know what they say.
I cannot stand you with this next matchup. You son of a bitch!
I didn't technically do this, but I like it. I saw this and I went, well, this is great. This is, I can't wait to see Jake's face. We have Road to Perdition versus Cloud Atlas, which Jake wishes were on opposite ends of this bracket.
Yeah, because I love... To me, this could have very well been my championship. So this hurts my soul, but I am going to have to choose Road to Perdition.
You gotta
it's Road to Perdition, which I actually think is Tom Hanks' best movie. Personally.
I'm Road to Perdition also.
Kissing you right on the mouth tomorrow, Kevin McCarthy.
It's a remarkable film.
Right on the mouth, and it's going to be wicked.
All right, Road to Perdition.
I remember the first time I saw Road to Perdition, it was... This is tough.
Now we have Philadelphia versus That Thing You Do, which I know Sean in particular loves That Thing You Do. But Philadelphia is also Philadelphia.
That is really hard.
I'm going to go That Thing You Do because I've seen That Thing You Do more times. But Philadelphia, both of those are incredible films. But I'm going to go That Thing You Do.
Here's the argument that you can make, but I don't think I'm going to make it.
All right.
But Tom Hanks is more relevant to Philadelphia. Yeah, well, exactly, but he directed That Thing.
But he directed That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
All right, never mind. It's That Thing You Do.
I'm also choosing That Thing You Do.
Wow, okay, That Thing You Do.
I use this as a factor when crafting my top 10 list at the end of the year. Replay value matters.
Okay.
Yeah. But Philadelphia.
But that really like kind of handicaps like movies that are harder to watch but are fantastic. It does.
I don't know. There are a lot of movies that are hard to watch on this list that I've watched a lot.
The greatest movies of all time I've only seen once. But
I don't knock the criteria, but I do think it does a disservice to some movies that are just undeniably great.
I said a factor, not the factor. Everyone take a deep breath.
I'm not knocking you down.
No, I got it.
But That Thing You Do will move on. Next we have A League of Their Own versus Turner and Hooch.
A League of Their Own.
That one feels
A League of Their Own.
I know, I do love Turner and Hooch.
Turner and Hooch is great.
Philadelphia got first rounded.
Wow. Yeah, it's tough.
Damn.
It's cutthroat. Forrest Gump versus You've Got Mail. We're going to finish for new folks here. We're going to finish this side of the bracket, then we move on to the other.
Gump. It's Gump. Oh.
I would give it to You've Got Mail.
I kind of want to give it to You've Got Mail. I
love You've Got Mail.
Come on. Jake, I'm going to use your criteria here. I would watch You've Got Mail more. I have seen it more than Forrest
Gump. There are some movies that you only watch once, Gabe.
Well, hang on. That puts us at a tie. If Kevin, are you locking in?
No, I'm not willing to budge.
I'm okay with Gump moving forward, but I do prefer You've Got Mail.
Yeah, I would. I'm closer to Sean in that I respect Forrest Gump. I don't mind watching Forrest Gump. It's not a movie that I ever am craving to watch.
Wait, Sean, you put Gump over You've Got Mail?
I don't think You've Got Mail is that good. I'm not a big fan.
Sleepless.
Would you have put Sleepless over Gump?
I would have put Sleepless over Gump.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Too bad.
I would. All right, Forrest Gump continues on, which is totally fine. Next we have Captain Phillips versus Castaway.
Wow. For me, it's Castaway.
Yeah, gotta go Castaway.
Castaway for me.
Castaway's good.
Which is a tough lock because Captain Phillips is great.
Yeah, it's Castaway.
But Castaway is.
Yeah.
Castaway is an all-timer.
Those blue eyes.
Now we have Big versus Road to Perdition. I think this is
Road to Perdition.
Perdition.
Yeah, this is where Big, I think, falls off. That's a tough one.
Wait, Sean, what was your choice?
You look like you were a little. Ooh.
I don't know yet. I'm thinking.
Wow, I'm surprised. I mean, Big is, you know.
Big is a terrific, terrific movie.
Yeah.
All right, Road to Perdition.
Road to Perdition.
Yeah, I mean, it's Road to Perdition.
It is Road to Perdition, I know.
That Thing You Do versus A League of Their Own.
Oh, that's hard.
That Thing You Do for me.
Still doing That Thing You Do.
That Thing You Do.
I'm going to League of Their Own.
I'm going That Thing You Do. But A League of Their Own.
I'm not mad about it, but I think I like Hanks in A League of Their Own more.
That's fair.
If Hanks was only playing the part of the manager and he hadn't directed it, I'd be willing to get off that Thing You Do bandwagon.
Yeah.
But because he directed it, it's so embedded with his
DNA.
Yeah. All right. That Thing You Do is moving on.
I'm not mad about that.
And then that brings us to Forrest Gump versus Castaway, which is amazing matchup.
Great matchup.
I mean,
Zemeckis Hanks versus Zemeckis Hanks.
Yeah, I would give it to Castaway.
For me, it's Castaway.
Castaway.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Goodbye, Forrest Gump.
Okay, there you go.
All right, come on.
Road to Perdition, for me, it's that thing you do.
Road to Perdition.
Okay.
Hey, that great run for that.
I'm happy to be right.
Great run, that thing you do.
I love that thing you do.
Castaway versus Road to Perdition.
Perdition.
For me, it's Perdition.
For me, it's Perdition.
Wow. Sean? It's Castaway. I think Castaway is a flawless movie.
Interesting.
So is Road to Perdition.
Yeah.
I honestly can't think of the last time I've sat down and watched Road to Perdition.
I would urge you to.
Yeah, well, it's amazing.
I know you're like enamored with
it. Okay, Conrad L. Hall's Oscar-winning cinematography, the last on-screen performance by Paul Newman, Daniel Craig before he was an anybody, an unrecognizable Jude Law, Thomas Newman's score that should have won the Oscar. Like
Superman plays the
Jude Law's best movie.
But Castaway is an impossible movie.
I'm not arguing against Castaway.
Hey, it's a like, Final Four.
You can't make that movie. Like what film allows you to put a pause in production long enough for the director to
Bobby Z
go
does.
Shoot another movie?
That's what Bobby Z does for you.
Think about Hank saying goodbye to Wilson as he swims.
Oh, dude, trust me. That's incredible. One of my.
Is there a better
score?
Scene?
Is that's Alan Silvestri, right? That score.
I think so.
When Wilson floats away.
Sean, I don't think this is like a landslide.
Here's the thing.
Two great movies.
If you guys had gone Castaway, I mean, look, my vote was always going to be Road to Perdition, but I would have been like, okay, all right. It's not like Charlie Wilson's War beating Road to Perdition. If it had been Castaway.
All right. Well, I am emphatically Castaway.
Road to Perdition matters, makes the final.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Will it go up against?
Hey, for the record, wait. I guess we have to say what the matchup is because for people that aren't watching,
I will say these were a little like I was like, well, okay, I guess you include them. They're very popular. This is an easy one: Saving Private Ryan versus Angels and Demons.
Saving Private Ryan. That being said, Angels and Demons is the best of that not great Robert Ludlum trilogy.
Yes.
Robert Langdon. Where'd I get Robert Langdon from?
Definitely Saving Private Ryan.
What was the third?
Ludlum is
Inferno.
Inferno. That's right.
Yeah.
But Angels and Demons is actually fun.
Saving Private Ryan.
Talk bad about Inferno because
Sean did the junket.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
I mean, I feel
I did
like
the
if,
Angels and Demons junket in Rome.
There you go.
I feel like if you're in a movie that's going to be could be in the final of a Spielberg bracket.
Yeah.
It's moving on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, Vin Diesel's in it.
Speaking of, we have Bridge of Spies versus The Post.
The Post.
I love both of these movies, actually, but for me, it's The Post.
I would say Bridge of Spies.
All right. Not bad. It's 3-1 for The Post, but.
Okay.
Good movies.
You guys remember Mark Rylance?
Oh, yeah. Academy Award winner, who beat Sylvester Stallone.
God, he was on a run for a little while there.
Yeah. Apollo 13 versus The Terminal.
Apollo 13.
Okay, for the record, I love The Terminal.
The Terminal, more fun than it even should be. It's a good
great John Williams score.
Yeah.
But yeah, Apollo 13.
Hanks is the only actor that could do The Terminal. It's one of those performances that you're like, yeah, this has to be Hanks.
I'm going to go with Apollo 13.
Apollo 13, though. Yeah, for sure. Apollo 13. God, I think I've talked about this with you guys recently. Apollo 13 is just it's a perfect movie.
Yeah, it really is.
Perfect film.
Yeah. How many, I mean, my guy, this really does make you realize how many amazing films he has.
Oh, it's borderline ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Next we have Catch Me If You Can versus The Da Vinci Code.
Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Catch Me If You Can. Yeah. I think, I mean, the fact that Catch Me If You Can is underrated Spielberg is insane. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And Christopher Walken.
It almost just seemed like a lark.
That's why they didn't put him in the poster.
Kev. Because he's walking.
You know, I don't know if you if you guys were following the Oscar race much that year, but like Walken got very close to winning the Oscar.
Sorry, bro.
I missed a joke.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. I said that's why they didn't put him in the poster, Jake. Because he would have been walking.
You were running.
I gotta hate this show.
Catch it if you can.
As a visual joke.
All right, now we have Toy Story versus Toy Story 4.
Toy Story 1.
Toy Story 1.
It was funny because I actually feel like 3 would have been a bigger challenger.
Well, if you didn't
look ahead,
3.
Let's move on.
Look ahead. We're not allowed to look ahead. Oh,
now
interesting.
We have Toy Story 2 versus Toy Story 3.
3.
2.
Yeah.
2.
You
say 2?
2 is a much better movie.
I think 2 is better than 1.
Whoa. 2 is better. 2 is better than 1, and 2 is better than 2 is the best. 2 is the best of all of them. I think
3 is the best.
1, I think it's the credit of being. It's one of those ones where it's like, it's kind of
sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Pioneering. But 2 is a better story. 2 is a much better story.
3, though, arguably the best. But,
yeah.
But
I'd still go 2, but that's okay.
All right. Story 3 moves on. Then we have A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood versus Saving Mr. Banks.
A Beautiful Day. Dude, Sean, you remember like me weeping in the theater in Toronto?
Yes,
and Sean being like, dude, are you okay?
Beautiful Day.
I'm neither. I don't really care about either of these movies.
What? Dude, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood's great.
I will say it's don't feel super strongly about either of these, but Beautiful Day.
Dude, that was his last Oscar nomination.
Beautiful Day?
Well, it won't be.
Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood? My issue with Saving Mr. Banks is I don't think Disney should be allowed to tell Disney's story.
Fair enough.
It felt a little safe. Like stamping out the cigarette when she walked in and be like, oh, I can't let the kids see me. Like that felt like Disney being a little too controlling of the image.
Beautiful Day.
Beautiful Day.
All right. Beautiful Day moves on. And then we have The Green Mile.
Great.
People at home have been waiting for The Green Mile versus The Polar Express.
I think Green Mile is one of his best. I'm saying Green Mile.
It's got to be
Green Mile. I think Polar Express is underrated, though.
Hot take. Green Mile, just as good as Shawshank.
No.
I think they're actually closer than...
I think they're close, yeah.
In terms of Frank Darabont and Stephen King prison movies, which is a very small niche.
It's a perfect franchise. I'll give you that. Yeah.
I can't wait for the third one.
It's 2 for 2.
But Darabont's best is The Mist.
Oh, the best? Really?
I don't know about that.
I love The Mist.
That's not even his best Stephen King movie.
Oh
dude, the ending of The Mist.
Yeah, but that's
the ending, yes,
that's,
but as a whole.
Yeah.
Green
Maybe it's not his best, but it's his most insane. That movie is incredible.
Then we have Saving Private Ryan versus The Post.
Hey, Beard versus Beard.
Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, it's Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan.
And that one's going to be tough to beat.
Love The Post.
Yeah, I do too. Wasn't that your number one that year?
Yeah.
Nice. Another great matchup. Apollo 13 versus Catch Me If You Can.
Wow. Catch Me If You Can.
Hanks, I mean, any other actor would love to have these two movies.
Yeah. This is a great career.
It's Apollo 13 for
I'm
me.
Going Apollo yeah
I'm gonna go Apollo but it hurts my soul to lose Catch Me If You Can this early, and then Kevin, I respect you for choosing Catch Me If You Can.
I'm okay knowing that Saving Private Ryan is still in the race, you know what I mean? Like, we still got
it's too light, it's just a little too lightweight. Apollo 13 has deeper themes and meanings.
I think Catch Me If You Can is almost I feel like it's so good it looks too easy.
That's a good way of putting it.
All right, Apollo 13 moves on.
These are so fun.
Then we have Toy Story 1 versus Toy Story 3.
I'm going one.
Yeah.
What are we doing? A tie.
All right, so we're tied. Let's have a quick discussion about if anyone's willing to shift.
I'm okay with one moving forward. I just think 3 is my favorite, but 1 is extraordinary.
I mean, honestly, neither of these are a hill I'm going to die on.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take 1. I give it to the
just for being a pioneer.
The one that started it all, and it's still good.
Yeah.
Next we have A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood and The Green Mile.
Green Mile.
Green Mile.
Rest well, John Coffey. What a matchup.
Then we have a finals that anyone would die for, which is Saving Private Ryan versus Apollo 13.
Ryan.
I'm going Ryan.
It's Ryan, but man, do I wish Apollo 13 was on the other side.
They're very close. The thing is, Private Ryan is such a technical masterpiece. Like,
I mean, yeah, but 13's like, it's no, it's not an easy film.
No. I know. It's I don't think they're close. Good.
Really?
I love Apollo 13, but I think Saving Private Ryan's on a different level.
I think it's clearly Ryan, but man, like Apollo 13, like I said, I think it's just a perfect movie. It's hard to say goodbye to a perfect movie, but yeah. Saving Private Ryan, also a perfect movie.
I mean, you're pitting, I think what it breaks down to ultimately is Ron Howard on his best day is not going to be as good as Spielberg on his best day.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think that's fair. Saving Private Ryan moves on, as it should. Then we have Toy Story 1 versus The Green Mile.
Toy Story.
I'm saying Green Mile.
I would say Green Mile.
Green Mile. Wow. All right. Green Mile moves on. That means the quarterfinal here is Saving Private Ryan versus The Green Mile.
Ryan.
Yeah.
It's Ryan. Oh, man. All right. To recap, our quarterfinals were Saving Private Ryan and The Green Mile versus Castaway and The Road to Perdition.
Green Mile does not belong in that. That's a 12 seed.
Saving Private Ryan. Saving Private Ryan. I will say it was on the weaker side of the bracket. I will give it that. Yeah. Saving Private Ryan moves on to the final, which brings us to Road to Perdition versus Saving Private Ryan. Wow. I mean, what if we just said, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Tom Hanks gets two movies.
I think Perdition is Hanks's best performance, but I would have to give it to Ryan. I can't not give it to Ryan.
I'm so leaning to Saving Private Ryan. I mean,
it's a hard one.
This is a finals for the ages. Jake?
I'm going Perdition.
You have to.
All right, Sean. It's a lot of pressure.
This is insane.
You can think on it.
See, that's funny, because I would have thought Sean would have been the first person to say Saving Private Ryan.
No, because here's the thing. I think that the middle of Saving Private Ryan wanders around a bit. I don't think it's as tight of a story. I think it has outstanding aspects to it. But Road to Perdition, I can at least argue, is a wonderful story from start to finish. That's the only thing that's kind of keeping me from going full throttle into Saving Private Ryan, because right now they're technically they are matched up side by side.
I mean, like, it's Sam Mendes at his best, and
it really is.
Spielberg at one of his best.
Are we going to say Sam Mendes at his best?
Also isn't Sam Mendes versus Steven Spielberg.
But you're talking like the supporting cast in Road to Perdition to me outweighs the supporting cast in Saving Private Ryan.
Really?
I
think Jude Law, Daniel Craig.
Yeah, those are heavy hitters. But I feel like,
come on, Vin Diesel.
That's a funny thing. But Vin Diesel's great. Vin Diesel's great. Like all the smaller players, most of them are much smaller than the supporting cast in Road to Perdition, as far as like stardom and names, and they're all fantastic.
Okay, I'm gonna make an argument. Road to Perdition is better because of Tom Hanks than Saving Private Ryan is because of Tom Hanks.
Lead of Saving Private Ryan too.
He's the lead of Road to Perdition.
Right. He's the lead of both.
But
it's tough.
I sat down to watch a movie at any given time and you put these two movies in front of me, I'm choosing Road to Perdition.
So you haven't seen Road to Perdition in years.
I know, but I know it's a better movie overall than Saving Private Ryan.
I mean, I love both of these films. I don't care. It's not that I don't care, but I think Saving Private Ryan is a better film, but it's
about
hard.
Giving it to Road to Perdition. I think that's
and totally remember, fair. I came into this conversation saying I'm going to make sure Road to Perdition doesn't make it all the way to the end.
And I might be the one pushing it. Don't do it for me.
Didn't you say that thing you do over Road to Perdition?
I did.
And so you said that thing you do over Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Absolutely not.
I wouldn't do that. No, that would be silly.
What sort of tradition winning you
is great.
But also, on the flip side, also, I wouldn't be mad at Saving Private Ryan one. You guys want to do rock, paper, scissors?
Well, what do we do in a tie?
Yeah, how do we do it?
I was flipping a coin.
Yeah. Okay, let's do that. I hate to see this come down to a coin flip, but these two movies kind of are.
I think they both deserve a chance decision here because they're both 10
out of 10s. I'm on the edge of my seat.
All right. So what I'm gonna do.
Are you doing
here,
a digital coin flip?
I'm just going to do a random number generator, 1 through 10. Even goes to Saving Private Ryan. Odd goes to Road to Perdition.
Okay.
Even Ryan, odd Perdition.
Okay.
It's an even number. It goes to Saving Private Ryan.
Wow.
It's a coin toss. What are you going to do?
The beard.
It's basically like the NFL overtime rules. If you win the coin toss, you win the game.
So unlike the Oscars, Saving Private Ryan won big.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, finally. Yeah, we got to give it Best Picture after all these years.
Fantastic. Wow. Fantastic run on for everyone there. Castaway making the quarter.
What a fucking career. Right? Look, you see it this way?
Can I just give the final four one more time? Castaway, sure. Road to Perdition, Saving Private Ryan, The Green Mile.
Wow. Jeez.
Amazing.
I would love to have seen Catch Me If You Can in that four.
I mean, I think Catch Me If You Can was put down where Toy Story is. Like, if we had one Toy Story matchup instead of two, I think Catch Me If You Can could outpace the Green Mile.
Green Mile. I think it would have. Yeah, I think it would have.
I would have liked to have seen Cloud Atlas go further.
I think similarly.
And by further, I mean any move at all.
Same with Philadelphia. Please go back and rewatch Philadelphia.
That's tough.
That movie's incredible.
That's
tough. What would you do for Saving Private Ryan versus Philadelphia, Sean?
I still think I'd have to go Ryan.
Yeah.
What do you think Tom would have chosen?
Ryan.
Larry Crown.
Larry Crown wasn't on the Finch.
Finch.
Guys, we got to start over.
Do you think he would choose Ryan over Perdition? I think he would.
No, I think he'd choose Perdition.
Yeah.
I think Perdition is really special.
Think about how special that is, like who he was working with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the veterans
are such an important part of who he is as a person.
True.
That's fair. Yeah. True. I mean, you look at his whole World War II, you know, limited series stuff.
How many movies has he made with Spielberg?
Saving Private Ryan,
The Post,
Bridge of Spies, The Terminal.
Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can. I feel like there's one more we're missing. Is there only five?
Five. I'm seeing five.
Okay. BFG?
Ryan, Catch Me If You Can, Terminal, Bridge of Spies, The Post. And then, of course, they did Band of Brothers, The Pacific, and Masters of the Air together.
Wow.
Yeah. And Spielberg's a producer on Road to Perdition, I think.
Oh, my God.
That's probably right.
Ryan is just that opening scene.
What was it at Elvis that Hanks told a story about Saving Private Ryan where he like saw the scene of like them like dragging the guy that got like his arm blown off. And he's like, I went up to like where, you know, like the break. And he's like, guys, we're really making something out there. Yeah.
Didn't they shoot it linearly is what he said?
I think at least the beach scene. Yeah. I think he said the beach scene was all shot in a row.
Crazy. And now I still have a visual of us walking from the hospitality to that room. And we didn't have a ton of his older stuff baked into the conversation. And it just that story came out, I was just like, okay, this is exactly what I was hoping for. Well,
and that's what we were talking about last week. You know, I've always heard that, you know, he doesn't love when reporters only want to talk about the old stuff. But I think one thing that we've discovered about him is he'll get you there. Mm-hmm. He'll get you to the things you want to talk about. But you gotta, to quote Saving Private Ryan, you have to earn this.
Yep. I was trying to think of a good story from this last time that he was on. I know that he came back around to. I mean, I still love the story of the lady hanging out the window, shaking the sheet.
That was so cool.
On the set. Yeah. It's the way he thinks about movies. It's the way he thinks about the industry. Yeah. It's the way he thinks about being a part of all of these classics. It's
He's a movie fan.
And there's a handful of movies that he's part of that we couldn't even get onto this list.
Like Finch.
Exactly.
You know, right? I will say an underrated movie that's not on here is Money Pit, which I think
Money
is
Pit. that was one that I was gonna say is like,
love the Money Pit.
Or Splash.
Splash, yeah. Oh my god.
Splash. I would have replaced the Burbs with Money Pit for personally.
Love Money Pit.
For movies that I watch and rewatch. Burbs just
Money Pit is so funny.
All right, call to action. Let us know your favorite Tom Hanks movie. Which one would you have put at the top of the bracket? If you even want to do a final four, drop in the comments down below.
Yeah.
In the meantime, follow us on social media. We'll be back with the show next week. We are at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach. The show is at Real Blend. We'll be back soon with another episode. And is it a review of Gladiator 2? When is that movie coming out?
22nd. But it's but it opens in the UK next week. So do we review it next week?
No. Sorry, UK fans. But I think we got to go with the domestic release. Just like I look at the numbers. I see where people listen. UK, they're up there. But, you know, most of our listeners are going to not be able to see it yet.
Gabe and I got to be like the normies and watch it the week of.
Lame.
I don't know that I think that's right. Yeah, I don't think I have a.
All right. Well, until next week.
Finch.
Night, bitch.
Dunkirk.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You've got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, oh.